gore, and sometimes a little more. My Bloody Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of My Bloody Podcast, your go-to horror entertainment podcast. I'm your host for the evening or day, Preston Barta, and attached to my hip, as always, is Mr. Brian Kluger. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing super well. Are we like Siamese twins, or can I be like Quato from Total Recall, where I'm attached to your stomach and talking to people?
Yeah, I like that better than the idea of me being Matt Damon and you being Greg Kinnear.
Matt Damon. Yep. Sweet. I like this. I like this. I wonder if we could actually go as that for Halloween one year. Quato and the dude who has Quato.
Yeah.
It would be so much fun.
The mechanics of that costume, I don't know how it would work.
I don't know either, but it would be so good. But I'm doing well, sir. Lots of horror goodness around, and it's almost Thanksgiving here, but we're not letting Thanksgiving stop our horror watching, are we?
Nope. Bringing out the knife more than cutting the turkey.
Oh, I like it. I like it. It's Thanksgiving. Everyone will be carved. Oh, goodness.
All right. So it's going to be hard to top last week's episode since we had filmmaker David Lowry on as a guest. And if you haven't listened to
it, was so much fun.
Oh yeah. And if you haven't listened to that one yet, thumb through our back catalog and check it out. I really, really enjoyed our conversation with David and hearing about his introduction to the horror genre, which was through books about film, which is crazy to me.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It was very, very cool. He just had a different take on all the horror stuff that I thought was just super awesome. And it was just fun talking to him about The Haunting and The Haunting of Hill House and just like horror soundtracks and all that good stuff. It was, he's badass.
For sure. So, this week it's just us two dudes. But the material we're focusing on this week is just as exciting. So for our 28th episode, so I guess this podcast is as old as I am now, we will be returning to normal format where we dive into the latest horror news, ask a bloody question of the week, our bloody recommendation of the week, and finally an in-depth discussion about Stephen King's 1992 Bizarro Sleepwalkers.
Oh my.
Yes.
Were you alive in 1992?
Yeah, I was alive.
Okay. All right. I was 11.
I was 2.
So you didn't see this when it came out then?
Absolutely not.
All right, good deal. All right. So what's up first on the horror news section?
Shall we begin with the Leprechaun Returns trailer?
Yes, I watched this, and this is like, what, the 312th Leprechaun movie?
Yes, however, they're doing the 2018 Halloween treatment, where it's a sequel to the original film.
And so I watched the trailer, and I gotta say, I'm super fucking excited for this movie. Like, it looks like it's scary, super silly and funny, gory, and just tons of minute fun. I don't know. It struck a chord with me like watching it. And I was like, oh man, this, I can't wait to watch this because it just looks good.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It still has that, you know, it's going like, what is it, straight to VOD or Blu-ray and DVD. So it still has that feel, but like a lot of these horror sequels tend to, if you go back and revisit them. But It has me excited because I think the guy that's playing the Leprechaun this round, who we've said in the past, his approach was very similar to Heath Ledger from The Dark Knight. So just his maniacal laugh and the fun that he seems to be having in torturing all these new batch of kids and idiots seems to be quite entertaining. So yes, I am right there with you. I think it will be a fun time. So
And so one of the guys in the trailer, is that Francis from Pee-wee's Big Adventure and like the bigger basketball player from Teen Wolf? It looks like him.
I'm pretty positive. I immediately recognize the guy that's who's playing like that old guy that knows everything in a horror movie. So yes. I didn't look him up, but yeah, I'm pretty positive it is him.
Oh, that's so amazing. And just like, I love in the trailer, it's like about a group of like younger kids, like like in their maybe mid to late 20s or mid to early 20s. And they're like,
yeah, millennials.
Yes. And being a millennial, they're very
green.
Green. Yes. Oh, I love that. Aha. That they're trying to save the environment. So they're doing like solar panels and, you know, stuff like that. And in the trailer, the text says it's all about going green. And then you see like the leprechaun's hat. And I was like, oh my, I'm so excited. Like, this is what I want in this horror movie. And it seems like they're doing it well. You could tell by my excitement. I'm just very excited about this. I feel like we need to watch this together.
Yeah, I think it'd be good for us to watch this and then do a episode on it.
Yes,
with the original.
Very much so. You know, that would be a good double feature.
I'm in.
I like it. So yeah, check out that trailer online and let us know if you're as excited as Preston and I am, because we are excited.
Yeah. So what else?
We got a little bit of sad news. You know, I feel like we have to bring this up. You know, Stan Lee passed away very recently, and I think he was a excellent guy, you know, in the comic world. He brought us so many characters and stuff like that, but also a fairly big writer as well, named William Goldman. In Hollywood passed away as well, which is very unfortunate because he's a writer, he wrote quite a lot of great films, including some excellent horror films, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, he did Misery.
Yep.
And then one of my not a horror film, but one of my favorites is The Princess Bride, like a lot of other people.
Yeah, I mean, there's horror elements in that as well, but he did Dreamcatcher, which is a novel based on Stephen King, which is something we'll talk about later, another Stephen King movie. But he also did like A Few Good Men, like he wasn't consulted on that. Twins, the comedy film, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, Maverick, Last Action Hero. Dude was not a lightweight whatsoever.
Yeah, Memoirs of an Invisible Man.
Which I love that John Carpenter film with Chevy Chase. That is a great one. So yeah, it's just kind of sad that he died. And of course, you know, Stan Lee passed away too. That's two pretty big people, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. But they, at least, I hate like saying this kind of stuff. It sounds odd to say, but you know, like they were older men, and they all their best work is out there for everybody and has inspired so many people. So they lived a good life and had a great career. So it's I'm glad that it's not more, you know, people who are young who have so much more to give. And but it's still a very unfortunate thing because it's nice whenever you see people, especially around Comic-Con time, when Stan Lee, because he stopped going to it, I think like last year or the year before, because of his health. And so he But he was just always so positive and inspired so many people. And there was just like the day that he died, so many pictures popped up who had pictures with him. And it was just nice to kind of all of us to celebrate his life together, because I mean, Marvel's a big deal in this industry and will continue to be a big deal. And so he will be sorely missed, as much as maybe not as much as, but I really like William Goldsman. I really like movies like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. And so they definitely left their print on cinema and pop culture.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. So yeah, check out his movies. His movies are available online and everywhere else. So pay tribute that way. But moving on, some interesting news in a new Twilight Zone TV series, which will be done by Jordan Peele. And I'm excited about this because my favorite show of all time is Twilight Zone, like the original one. And I'm glad like Jordan Peele is doing it. But I just... it's annoying that it's going to be only available on CBS's like paid like web app, which is unfortunate. But it looks like Kumail Nanjiani from The Big Sick and my favorite HBO show. Why am I blanking on it?
Community or not Community? Silicon Valley.
Valley, yes. He has joined the Twilight Zone, and I wonder what the deal is with it. Like, so, I'd imagine Twilight Zone is going to be a series of episodes that are not, you know, linked to each other. But I wonder if Kumail like joined as a producer or like the narrator or anything like that. Do you know?
As far as I've read, his role in the show is being kept quiet, and so it's not clear if whether he'll be cast in the show on a particular episode, maybe like something on, you know, that nightmare at 10,000 feet or 20, whatever it was. But I imagine he'll just pop up in an episode. I don't think it'll be like a much bigger role than that. Maybe he'll write or something like that. That'd be quite nice, because as Jordan Peele's kind of proved, he has exercised his talents in other genres and has done great wonders. So I would love to see what Nanjiani could do to a in another genre other than comedy.
True. I'm excited to see it, and I wonder, I guess it's being kept quiet, but do you think it would be a possibility that he'd be like the Rod Serling character, just like to intro every episode?
That would be funny. But I don't think so. I don't think it will.
All right. Well, I guess we'll find out soon enough. But I am excited about this, even though it's on the will be only available on the CBS paid app. But I guess that's another way to buy it, another reason to. Cool. I like it. Moving on, there's going to be a new documentary called Angela, which is a sleepaway camp documentary, which we've talked about on the show. And it's very interesting because Scream Factory released all three sleepaway camp movies recently. And there are some fairly lengthy, like, behind the scenes and interviews and stuff like that about the movie. So I wonder if they're going to go that route or like use footage from that, or if they're like really going to just, this is going to be an all-inclusive ultimate kind of documentary on everything, on how crazy this movie is.
Yeah. Well, Bloody Disgusting got the exclusive, and it'll be executive produced by Felisa Rose, the original Angela Baker. And as far as I know, it is a documentary that will be four hours long and will cover the original film, the second and the third, and then also the return to sleepaway camp. And we'll have, as you would expect, interviews with people who were involved in those films, and also take a tour of the original camp from with the cast of sleepaway camp. as well as the second film, third film, and go through all that. And so just like it supposedly will have hours of never seen before footage. So probably exactly the kind of documentary that you would find on a Scream Factory release. It will just have more of it. And I love those films, as we discussed in the past. And so I am all for diving more into it and learning more information about it.
Holy shit. 4 hours. So this is kind of like Never Sleep Again, that big overarching, Nightmare on Elm Street documentary that was almost.
Yeah. Crystal Lake Memories, crazy. Just like an hour long for each film.
Wow. That's pretty crazy. I mean, I love those documentaries of the Friday 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street ones, because they just give so much fun information and how it's like build, like they go through each movie. So yeah, I'm definitely up for this Sleepaway Camp one, just because, I mean, I'm very curious, because like we just said that in those Scream Factory interviews and stuff like that, they do give a ton of information behind the scenes info on the films already. So I'm curious as to like where this one will go, if not just a little bit further.
Yeah. What's so great about those documentaries that we've already mentioned, especially the ones on Scream Factory, is because these releases, or these repackaged films are, you know, of films that came out years and years ago. So they're not exactly tied to, their contracts or anything like that. They don't have to, you know, with new films that come out when we interview, them, it all kind of comes from like, it's a safety thing. Like it's a safety filter. They're not going to be completely honest with you. They're just going to, you know, say how much they had a good time and things like that. With these films and these kind of documentaries, you get like, it's just brutally honest. People will say that they, you know, this happened on set, or I didn't have a great experience here. And then people thought this, but I thought that. And so it's just, it's makes you more fascinated, with the film, because you can get like that honest feedback and those honest insights that you've been wanting to have ever since the film came out, and you're finally getting it.
Right. Yeah. I'm in. Hopefully they talk a lot about James Earl Jones's dad in this documentary, because he was so funny in the first one.
Yeah.
And just like, cause they talk a bit about like, you know, like the big reveal in the first film and how that all happened, and just like all the crazy shit, the pedophilia aspect to it, and just, oh, it was just ahead of its time, really, you know, in my mind. So I can't wait to watch it.
Yeah, me too.
All right. So I know last week or a couple weeks ago, you started that new Netflix show, The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, which is brought back Sabrina the Teenage Witch, basically, but a scarier version. So have you finished it? And how is it? Does it hold up? Is it good?
I have not finished it yet. I think I got about 2 episodes left. But at the time when I recommended it, I think it wasn't last week, it was the week before, I had only watched the first 2 episodes, and I was really taken with it, because I felt that those first 2 episodes, went hand in hand and functioned as a film. Like those 2 parts went together. And so I was curious if it continued down that route and they had other filmmakers come on and directors and writers, and just, I wonder how the rest of it went. So I can provide a little bit of an update on that, cause I'm on episode 8 now. I was worried, because after the 3rd episode, tonally felt different. It was the show that I was fearing it was going to be from the beginning, which is very Twilight-like and has a lot of pop music, and it almost felt like it was written by somebody from Twilight. Like it just had that kind of stink on it. That I was not liking. And so I was really let down by the 3rd episode, but then it came back with the 4th, and from there just got crazier and crazier. So I would say overall the big issue of the show is its tone. Like there's moments where it does feel like it's, you know, like the title indicates, chilling. Like it's just like they're hanging out, not really doing much, speculating, talking, and it's not as interesting. And so it has those things of what we were talking about in last episode with David Lowery about how some series, they just have a 10 episode deal and they got to meet that. And so they're finding ways to like create an arc to where it'll function that way. But you will have moments where it just feels like dead exposition, or it just doesn't serve a greater purpose. And there are episodes after that, like even though they're fun, I think maybe the fourth or fifth episode, it might be the fourth, they have like this demon character that is like Jason from Jason Goes to Hell, like a worm that like is finding a host and tears apart their body. And then there's like this other witch demon that looks like a character straight out of Buffy. And like the aesthetics just look exactly like it. And even the mood of the show kind of felt like that. Where it's kind of silly, and it's something I will talk about when I get to my next segment with like Fantastic Beasts, where I'm not a huge fan of like characters creating their own problems and then that's just what happens for the whole episode. Like it's not like some outside source comes in, like a villain character, and then creates chaos. Like it's just like they created their own problem, and then that's, and we're just there to see them pick up the pieces. So there's episodes like that where it just doesn't quite click with the rest of it. But I think overall, especially once you get to the seventh episode, where it just gets absolutely insane, dark, Satan is satanic shit's happening, and it gets really crazy witch stuff. There's some really crazy witch stuff in it. Like there's a something called the Feast of Feasts, or whatever it's called, and then like a witch has to like sacrifice herself so the rest of the covenant can like feast on this witch. And so yeah, there's straight up cannibalism in the seventh episode, and it is just completely fucked. And so it's surprising that there would just be moments like that where it just gets super dark, but then you have other moments where it just feels like something straight out of Twilight, or it's just written like in this kind of teeny boppy way. And so yeah, big overall problem, tone, but still entertaining and enjoyable. So I'm excited to continue with the last two episodes and just kind of see how it finishes. But overall, I think it's fun. It's I really, like I said, with those first two episodes, really enjoy the what's her name again? Kiernan
Shirpka.
Yeah, I'm gonna get her
from
name
Mad Men, from Mad Men.
Yes, yes. She's really good in this, and I know some people have had issues with her performance, or maybe not so much her performance, but her character. They say that like maybe like a little too whiny and things like that. But I feel like she does a really good job of kind of steering the chaos of the story, and handles it in a way that you think is pretty sensible. So really enjoy her in the show. Other characters, like the human characters, not so much. They don't get as much material to really chew the scenery with. Like they're just kind of there to exist and keep things moving, but aren't as interesting as the witch characters and the demons and everybody else. But yeah, so problems in there, but still enjoyable, and you should check it out if you still haven't checked it out.
All right, so it's recommended still.
Yeah
Okay. All right, cool. All right, so The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina is on Netflix. Check it out. In our last little bit of news, Fantastic Beasts Part 2, Crimes of Grindelwald, like the Vivitch, is out in theaters this weekend, and I saw the first movie. You know, I love Harry Potter, and watching the first Fantastic Beasts movie, I didn't like it. I mean, it's okay, but the only character I really enjoyed was the kind of a sidekick, like the bigger guy who owned the bakery.
Oh, Dane Fogler.
Yes. Everybody else was obnoxious and annoying. The female characters were terrible in it. And even Newt Salamander, played by
Scamander. Salamander.
Salamander, yeah. was just, I didn't like it. So when the second film was, you know, of course, going to be released, I haven't seen it yet, but, you know, I'm going to defer to Preston on this because I know Preston has seen it, but I just don't have any hopes for it, and I just feel like it's going to be not good either, but maybe I'm wrong. Hopefully I'm wrong, because I would like to see a better film in this Harry Potter universe. Preston, Fantastic Beasts, Crimes of Grindelwald, I don't even know, fuck, Salamander. How was it?
Yes. So, I didn't get the chance to really explain last week when I was making my Harry Potter joke to David Lowery that I absolutely love the Harry Potter franchise. I read the books to my son almost every night. We're on the, since he's been born and he's 15 months at this point, we are on book 4. But I think after we finish this book, we're going to have to go back to picture books, because he needs to be able to visualize things. But anyway, yeah, I saw it last night. They had a screening earlier this week, but I couldn't go. I love it when they screen Harry Potter films or anything related to it, Fantastic Beasts films, at the Alamo Drafthouse, because they have like their exclusive menu, and they have butterbeer, which they call better beer. And it's like this sweet drink. And I liked the idea of being able to just see it in my own backyard, which is in Denton, Texas for the moment. And then in the screenings all take place in Dallas. So it's more of a drive for me. So just I wanted to be able to just watch it and not really have to worry about writing something about it. So, saw it last night. And so my wife and I went to the 5 p.m. showing at the Alamo in Denton, and they had a problem with the screening because this particular theater, which is called the Big Show, it's like their own version of like IMAX, like a big screen, great sound, that sort of thing. It takes two projectors, and so like one of them was bumped or something like that, and they would have to reboot it. So I noticed it in the trailers, my wife and I, when we were watching the film, that something was off. Like the frame rate was all fucked up and just didn't look right. And I was like, did they have like the 3D setting on this? Because like the their motion just seems really off and jittery. So I was like, maybe it's just the trailers. And then once the movie kicked on, I was like, no, it's wrong. And so I got immediately upset, and I was like, I can't watch a movie like this, because years ago when I saw The Dark Knight Rises, I went to like a press screening and saw it beforehand, but when I went with my friends to go see it on like Thursday at midnight or 8 o'clock whenever they screened it, I noticed that the sound was really messed up and it was front loaded and had a lot of problems, and I just got so upset, and I was like, I'm not dealing with that, because it affected how I feel about the movie. And I just didn't want to deal with that. And so Alamo took care of me. They paid for our meal. They gave us rain checks. And they said that we could go in the screening that's at 6:45. And so it was just nice. It was nice that that happened. So I was able to like view the movie how I wanted to. So sorry for that whole thing, but I just thought it was just kind of a need to know like what happened before I go into this review. Okay. So, Crimes of Grindelwald. I overall, I enjoyed it. I think it is very similar in its structure to the seventh Harry Potter film, Part One, where and it may be a bit of a problem because I know a lot of critics did have problem with that film when it came out,
like all set up and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's like all set up for like bigger things to kind of happen going forward, and so it's a lot of talking and that's where my issue is with the film, kind of like the first one, the first 40-50 minutes of the movie I just didn't give a shit for with the first Fantastic Beasts, because what I was talking about earlier, it's just like him, Newt Scamander, playing Pokemon for 40 minutes because he created his own problem. Beasts get out of his suitcase, he's got to find them all. So I just, it's not interesting. It's just like, that's just creating fillers, even though you get to learn, you know, meet the Beasts and why he feels the way that he does about them. But at the same time, like, you can find a more creative way to, you know, skip past that and just, you know, learn about it much quicker. And so it's all the exposition is kind of dry for me in the first 40 minutes. But once it gets to Hogwarts, as if you've seen the trailer, it shows Hogwarts. And I think, like, that's what made me really want to see the film, was seeing Hogwarts again, because it just brought all the magic back. Because that was a problem, even though I like the first Fantastic Beasts film. But like you said, Brian, I don't think the characters are as interesting. They're annoying, like you said. But I just enjoy the world. And I think I appreciate it more from like a textbook kind of level, where I'm like, oh, you know, the mythology of it, like what the expanded universe kind of looks like, or expanded world. And so that was interesting to me. And they kind of go further with that this round, and the way the connections that they have to the Harry Potter world are pretty fascinating. It's not so much like it's trying to bridge the gap between it, like Peter Jackson did with the Hobbit films, where it's just like directly connecting to it in an annoying way. They do it in a kind of a subtle way, and you're like, oh yeah, you know, Nagini, snake woman, or she's like a woman that turns into a snake, and she's the snake from the first film. And I know a lot of people, or the original Harry Potter franchise, and I know people have expressed frustrations with that, because it changes the meaning of when at the end of the last Harry Potter film, when they kill the snake, it's just like, oh no, they killed this woman who was trapped, you know, as a snake. And so I think they're going to be expanding upon that going forward, like what the true meaning of that. So at this point, like, I'm more emotionally invested in the story, because they set up things, and like there's like some depressing shit that kind of happens in this film with some of the characters. Like, it ends like the seventh Part One film, like, ends on a doomed note, and it has you excited about what could come. So I think it's a nice like stepping stone towards something that's going to be better and more interesting. But ultimately, it, you know, it has a problem functioning as on its own as a film. Like, it's just a lot of it just feels like a book. And I think that's the problem with J.K. Rowling writing these stories, is she doesn't know what to cut. And when I'm when I'm reading the books to my son, because I haven't read them in a long time, I'm reading this, I'm like, oh, they cut this from the film. I understand why they cut it from the film. It's not completely necessary. It's just a lot of padding. And so you can feel that padding in this film. And I think that at the end of it, if they do end up making all these five films that they're supposedly going to make, I think at the end of it will be like, yeah, they probably could have narrowed it down to two. But I'm still invested, and I'm interested to see like where things will go from here. I like Johnny Depp. I think maybe he's a piece of shit person in real life, but I really enjoy him as an on-screen presence, and I think he does good work here as Grindelwald. And I hope he doesn't do something even more shitty to because he's going to be here in more films, and they set up a really good dynamic between or relationship between him and Dumbledore. And so even though they don't show moments of them like act like Jude Law, who plays young Dumbledore in here, like them together, but it shows like flashbacks of them together when they're younger, and you can get a sense of like their relationship which you can only assume is a romantic one. And so I'm just interested to see where things will go from here. But yeah, I think if you like the Harry Potter films and you tolerated the first Fantastic Beasts film, I think you should go see this one. Like, it's fine.
Okay. All right. So it's fine. It's not great. It's not terrible.
I think I think it improves upon the first film because, you know, we got all the shit out of the way. And so we can get a little, you know, we get more shit, but, it's better shit.
Okay.
I guess. So
it's a polished turd.
Yeah. There you go.
Oh, you sold me.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Well, I'm glad you saw it and I'm sorry you liked it.
Yeah. Well, I felt it was necessary to bring up because they're, you know, witches. It's like dealing with all the themes of horror films, but it's scarier. It's darker than a lot of the other Harry Potter or Wizarding World films, and so especially Grindelwald's presence. Like, there's even a shot in the film where they kill a baby, like a toddler. And my wife was like leaning over me, and she's like, "That's if they're about to kill this kid, this is fucked." And they do, and it's fucked. So it's dark.
I like it now. Now I want to see it.
So I Grindelwald's he's a villain. So and darker, or at least at this point, than the early films of the Harry Potter franchise with Voldemort. Like, he is just doesn't give a shit. So it's just going to be interesting to see what they do with him going forward.
Cool. I'm in. All right. I want to see this one scene that you're talking about for sure.
Well, it happens pretty early on, so you won't miss it.
Okay, cool. All right. I think that ends our horror news section and then brings us into our bloody question on my bloody podcast.
Yeah.
It's a fun one. I'm curious to see if we have the same answers. Preston, what is this question?
Yeah, well, you had mentioned as a possible question to tap into, like, you know, in horror movies, you know, you have a lot of idiots. Like, it's just littered with dumbasses everywhere. You had mentioned, like, what if somebody, like, one thing could be corrected, it would just change the course of the film. And so I thought that was fascinating. Just why don't we just start with, like, what is the biggest dumbass character from a horror movie? Because, you know, the tropes of horror movie morons has been very well documented. So there's plenty, and God knows how many there are in Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street movies. But do you want to go first with yours, and then I'll do mine, or you want to do one, and then I do one? And then
I guess I have a couple runners up, but like I have one big one. And do you want me to go first?
I only have two. Okay. So do you want me to just get mine out of the way and then we'll get into yours and you can do all your runner-ups?
Sure.
Okay. So the two movies I'm picking from are the first two horror movies I ever saw and have talked about countless times. So I guess, what can I say? They're gold mines. So I guess the first one would be the original Scream movie. There's Rose McGowan's character, Tatum Riley. And in the movie, she makes a dumbass move and she gets a dumbass's death.
Yeah, she does. It's a great death for her.
Yeah. So she decides to crawl through a doggy door in the garage, and Ghostface turns the garage or opens the garage door, and she gets halved by this superhuman garage door that has the power to lift a body and also break it in half or break the neck.
Yep.
So yeah, that's my first one. So
It's a good one.
Yeah. It's just nice. It's just a little extra layer that she just you know how when you get dumbass characters in horror movies like Friday the 13th, like you're like, as an audience member, you're being very vocal and adding your own soundtrack and say, no, don't do that. Why would you do that? And then they just, you know, just get hacked. But this one, like, she makes a dumbass decision, and then her death shows how much of a dumbass she was. So there you go.
Yeah.
Felt like it was important to pick that one.
Good.
All right. Number two is the mayor in Jaws. the dude has a very airtight logic, and I think at one point in the film, he's in the first Jaws, because he's in the second one too. How he got reelected, I don't know, but you know, I guess that sounds familiar. But yeah, at one point in the film, he says something like, "If you yell Barracuda, everybody says what?" but if you yell shark, everybody panics, and we can't have a panic on 4th of July. So he's obviously concerned with summer tourism, but I guess he just didn't really think about, the people staying who are still there getting eaten. So his complete disregard for human life is just complete lunacy. And it takes like Brody to come in to be like, you know what, you're going to be the mayor of Sharkville. So, yeah, just, a guy who's, very greedy and just wants people to have a good time at the beach. But man, if there's a lot of people there, like the end of the Meg, the shark's going to go, go on a killing spree. So, pretty big dumbass move, and he's a dumbass character.
Yes, he is. He's responsible for like people's deaths.
Yeah. Yeah. If he had some sense, that whole situation could have been completely avoided. Especially nowadays, like I imagine if they made this film, I don't know, it just feels like a different time then where that it seems like it makes a little more sense that somebody would make a decision like that. But now, because, you know, people are very vocal and will express their concerns right out in the open, I think there just would have been a backlash immediately if somebody found out that there was a shark out there, that they wouldn't go to the beach because he made that dumbass decision. So it's just interesting.
Yep, yep. So I like those both. Actually, one of my runners-up was the mayor in Jaws, which
nice.
It was... I just remember looking at my movie collection, like, oh yeah, the fucking mayor just didn't believe anybody and just was like, we got to make money and just who cares? It's not real.
He's like the minister of magic in Harry Potter, who's like, he's back.
He's back. He's here.
Voldemort's back. It's not true until I see it.
Yes. So yeah, I like that. My other runner up was Franklin from Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the guy in the wheelchair who's just a pain poor in dude. The ass so much. And it's like, why would he ever agree to go be like the fifth wheel, no pun intended? And like camping, like you can't push him like down. It's ridiculous. And he just it's just great to see him every time I watch that movie because you're so happy he gets what's coming to him. It's excellent. So yeah, I like it. But my number one, and this number one dumbest movie character in a horror film, I don't know if it's like, yes, he is fucking dumb, but it's like as much as I just hate this character so much because I think it all could have been avoided if it weren't for this character. And I'm talking about the movie, the first Paranormal Activity.
Micah.
Yes, Micah. There's the boyfriend and the girlfriend, basically the only two people in the movie. And it's the boyfriend because shit starts to kind of happen and it's kind of manageable. And then this guy, this boyfriend, is just such an idiot and a dumbass and an asshole who he basically like taunts this demon and like basically kills himself and his girlfriend by like buying cameras and like just like fucking like he gets a Ouija board when he's like specifically told not to by his girlfriend and like a demonologist basically. It's like, don't do it. You're just going to piss it off. And he goes and does it anyway. And he's responsible for all of this horrible shit that happens in this movie resulting in their deaths. And like, even like if he would have stopped doing that, yes, they say in the movie, oh, it's going to stick around with you no matter where you go. But the doctor that came over, like the demonologist was like, we have somebody else going to come over. Just wait like a little bit. And if they would have waited, they wouldn't have done anything. They could have waited and survived, but this guy is such a jackass. Through the entire movie, he's not likable one bit. And he's like literally just fucking with his girlfriend and trying to act like, this is my house. I'll take care of this shit. And it's like, oh my gourd. I don't know. What do you think, Preston?
It's a good one because... I was just thinking as you were explaining that, I was like, man, how short that movie would have been if they were both like sensible characters. Like what that would have been like. But yeah, absolutely. You also made me think of Thomas Jane's character at the end of The Mist.
So yeah, the end of The Mist, you know, when I first saw that movie and how that ended, my mind went straight to From Dusk Till Dawn, one of the last moments where it was just Kate and George Clooney in the Sea of Vampires. And she goes, will you want me to save these last two bullets for us? And he goes, no, use it on the next fuck that tries to bite you. And I'm like, yes, like use that in The Mist. Why would you go do this? You barely went anywhere. You survive.
I was like, if there's like a little bit of a possibility that if you just, if something's coming, just use it on that. And you know what? You're just going to die quick anyway. So just take it.
Yeah, that was such a horrific ending and just like a super dumb move from like a very smart character throughout the whole film.
Right.
And it's just like, what? Frank Darabont, why? Like, I know it doesn't make sense. He wouldn't have done that. His whole goal was to save his people and not to kill them.
But it's definitely one of the most shocking endings, so I still talk about it today.
Yeah, obviously. No, for sure. But yeah, now I want like a t-shirt of Franklin.
I'm sure there is.
Yeah, I think I need one just because it's so great.
Just go to Texas Frightmare. They might have one.
Yes. All right. That's our bloody question. Let us please let us know what the dumbest character in a horror movie is. We'd love to know. But let's move on to my bloody recommendations. I'll go first with this, if you don't mind.
By all means.
Yeah, bloody recommendations, where we give you a recommendation of a horror movie, new or old, that you might not remember. We just want to suggest it to you to see and watch again. Mine is a very, very strange film. It's called Woochie, the Demon Slayer, and it's a Korean film from 2009. Have you heard of this?
I have not.
Okay. So, Woochie, like W-O-O-C-H-I, the Demon Slayer. Woochie the Demon Slayer. South Korea really struck gold with this film because it's like action-packed horror, and it also kind of plays out maybe kind of like a cartoony fairy tale, horror fairy tale, along with a little bit of like violent sci-fi thriller. And it like, it made tons of money in Korea, like hundreds of millions of dollars. It's insane how much money this movie made. But the best way to enjoy Wuchi the Demon Slayer is kind of like midnight with friends. Have some beers, because you'll really enjoy it that much more. Because it's not really a serious movie, but the film kind of like tells us about this magic instrument that keeps monsters and demons at bay and trapped in like another plane, another world, preventing them from coming over to wreak havoc on Earth and its inhabitants. Kind of like, you know, in a maybe not sort of similar to Pacific Rim in a way, but like more like demons and monsters. And you know, we've heard this story quite a bit. So the guardians of these monsters make a mistake somewhere, and it causes the demons to be unleashed in the real world. As this happens, that magical instrument that can trap the demons inside falls into the hands of a very, very, very bad dude. So meanwhile, the main hero, Wuchi, is a monk. Who, you know, he's a little crazy. He's a little troublemaker. And he's told by his master to fight the evil and take back the magical instrument and save the world. It sounds like pretty cut and dry. So Wuchi sets out with like some of his friends, who has a very, really, really funny ability, which is just like, oh shit, this is where this is going. And then the pure evil comes to find them and kill them. So yeah, that's kind of the basic storyline of this film. The story plot's not really cohesive and it kind of jumps around, but it's super fun. Like, there's over-the-top performances, very good stunt work, and very impressive CG effects that you will laugh at. There's even a giant rabbit in this film. Oh my goodness. It's so much fun. Wuchi the Demon Slayer. Like, don't go into this thinking like, oh shit, it's going to be an Oscar winner. This is going to be serious. No. Fucking have fun with it. Drink some whiskey. Have some friends over and make fun of it. It's super fun. Wuchi the Demon Slayer. It is on Blu-ray and it's super cheap right now. It's about like less than $15 or around $10 or something like that. But yeah. Check this out. I think you'll really like it. Wuchi, the Demon Slayer. Preston, your bloody recommendation, sir.
Yeah, that's a nice appetizer for sleepwalkers.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, well, I picked 1998's Urban Legend, another film that was put out by Scream Factory just recently. Not only did they put out that one, but they also put out the second one, Urban Legend's Final Cut. And I watched both of them. But Urban Legend, the original, is the one that is more worth a damn. So, yeah, this film has Jared Leto in it, Rebecca Gayhart, Joshua Jackson, Loretta Devine, Tara Reid, and Robert Englund pops up in it as a professor, and a good role in it. So, yeah, this film is about the idea of an urban legend. These kids are at a school, but it mostly centers around this New England college student named Natalie, played by Alicia Witt. She was most recently in that Exorcist TV show that came and went. She finds herself kind of swept up in a series of sadistic murders that are inspired by urban legends, and that's the fun of the film, just seeing this killer who kills people based on urban legends, because what we like to do at college is tell stories. And so just to hear, in gossip, like, we're really into gossip and telling stories and all that. And so this movie is just all about that. So, you know, urban legends about a killer being in the back of your seat. This movie does that. Having your liver removed and waking up in an ice bath. This franchise does that. The second one does that. I mentioned it in the first one. But how each of the murders are handled in this film are very well done. Watching the film today, I've said the word stank a lot. It has that 90s stank on it, where, you know, certain music, rock music, and the way that characters behave is just like so 1998. But the story is still good, and the kills are still good, and it's just nice to see people like Robert Englund pop up, and Danielle Harris pops up from the Halloween films as Jamie. So she's in it, and so yeah, it holds up pretty well today. And the way that it kind of ends, like horror movies tend to do, with like that there's more to come, it kind of reflects like Halloween. So it's just like the movie could be its own franchise. Like there's a lot of possibilities with it. They could just keep going and going based on region, because where I'm from in Denton, we have an urban legend about a Goatman's Bridge. So there's just like, it's just like an endless supply that, and I wish they would make it into a TV series, because it'd be a lot of fun. Yeah, if you have never seen Urban Legend, check it out. It holds up really well, and you should get the Scream Factory edition, because it comes with a feature-length documentary that I watched and had a really good time with. It's even split up in by topics. Like they have it split up by cast and like how they cast the film, how they came up with the story, how it started, and what it eventually became, and the urban legends that they decided to do, and how they produced it. And like I was talking about earlier with people being brutally honest, people were being brutally honest. And like it's even kind of funny sometimes, because even the director of photography was like, I try to treat this film not as a horror film. It's not a horror film. It is a, it's like The Shining. It's got its drama. And I was like, yeah, that's true. But at the end of the day, it's still a horror movie. And it's like, but it's just funny. So yeah, just to get all these people's perspectives. So yeah, it's like loaded with great features, all this never before seen behind the scenes footage, and archival making of featurette. So it's just, it's loaded. Nice original slipcover, like I love. And I've mentioned a lot on the podcast, love them slipcovers. And so great stocking stuffer if you are a horror fan, or friends, or have loved ones that are horror fans. And I guess I'll quickly mention Urban Legends Final Cut. Not recommending that one. Almost did, because half of it is pretty good, and it is funny, and it starts off with that what I was hinting at earlier, or mentioned earlier, with having your liver removed and waking up in a bath, and how they handled that death was hilarious. And it's got I should say that Urban Legend kind of came out like, you know, 2 years after Scream, and you feel that it's trying to be like that. And Urban Legends came out the same year as Scream 3, and it has that feel. But Scream 3 came out, and I looked it up, because I was like, man, they're so similar in a lot of ways, because it's about like kids at a college campus making a movie about urban legends. So it's very Wes Craven like, with like, you know, New Nightmare, but not as clever, because it loses focus and becomes complete dog shit by the end of it, and is just like your average kind of a killer film. Really enjoyed half of it, just didn't like the rest of it, despite it having a pretty good cast, including Anthony Anderson and Ava Mendez. And it was actually written by one of the writers, Scott Derrickson, who did Doctor Strange and Sinister. And so still glad I watched it, still glad I own it, but it's a shame when you watch a movie that has like the potential to be so good and a good follow-up, and it just really shits the bed. The second one's directed by John Ottman, who does like the score for a lot of Bryan Singer films, and like Superman Returns and X-Men 2. And so it's just interesting that he directed the film, and he also composed the score. And the score is not very good. It's very cheesy. It felt like I was watching Halloween 5 when they have all those cheesy sound effects and things like that. Urban Legends Final Cut is not good, but Urban Legend is good, and you should check that one out again.
Yeah, the urban legends, I always, like you said, put those in the same bowl as, like, I Know What You Did Last Summer and Scream.
Yeah.
There was, like, a plethora of those types of movies. But, yeah, urban legend is fun. I like that. And you said this earlier. It's like, I always find it weird when filmmakers, like, they have some, like, notion that, like, I don't want my movie to be a horror movie. And it's like, what? Why, what's the stigma with horror? It's amazing.
Right.
Yeah, there we go. Bloody recommendations, all good. Wuchi the Demon Slayer and Urban Legends, Urban Legends Final Cut. Get those on Blu-ray. But let's move on to our main event, Sleepwalkers from 1992. Oh my god. Written by Stephen King, based off an unpublished book of his, directed by Mick Garris. We like Mick Garris here. He's done some very fun movie like Critters 2, Psycho 4, The Stand.
Hocus Pocus.
Yeah, Hocus Pocus. The Stand TV show, The Shining TV series. He actually wrote Batteries Not Included, The Fly 2, and Michael Jackson's Ghosts. Mick Garris directed Sleepwalkers, and this movie... Like, if you look this movie up, like, everybody hates this film. And I don't know why. Like, it is, yes, it is so silly.
It is glorious.
Yeah, it's silly, it's ridiculous, but I'll be damned if this is not a fun movie to watch. And it's just so crazy. Like, I feel like the creators and writers of True Blood watched this movie a lot, and they were like, we need to put more of that in this show. And because there's all sorts of, like, vampire stuff and shapeshifters, werecats, sacrifices, virgins, blood.
Incest.
And also, which is a lot of fun about this movie, if you're a very big horror film aficionado, there are tons of horror movie filmmakers in this movie as cameos.
Oh, yeah.
Like Stephen,
it's like a Zoolander amount.
Yes, like Stephen King, John Landis, Joe Dante, Clive Barker, Toby Hooper. And even the Jedi Master himself, Mark Hamill.
Mark Hamill. Yeah. Ron Perlman.
Ron Perlman and Glenn Shaddix, who you would definitely recognize as Othos from Beetlejuice.
Yep. And he is a disturbing character.
Yes.
He's a real Chester Molester type.
Yeah.
But he gets it good. He gets his hand ripped off or cut off, bitten off by this character's dick.
Yes, this movie's insane. Like, we just described a little bit about it to you. And so this movie came out in 1992. It was made for $15 million, and it actually made double its profit. But just everybody hated this movie for some reason. And the film kind of, it's about this mother and her son, Charles, mm-hmm. and Mary, who are shape-shifting nomadic sleepwalkers. And they're basically like vampires who feed off the energy of virgins. So basically they have to fuck people in order to get their life force out of them. They can transform, they can become invisible, they can... but their main, like, shape-shifting thing is, like, their werecats. And, like, their kryptonite, basically, are actual house cats.
Yeah, makes total sense.
It makes total sense. So they move into this town. The son goes to high school, and he finds this girl that he wants to take and make, like... Yeah. Basically, well, to a little backstory, this mother and son are, like, the last two of this species. So they're trying to survive. I get it. So when this high school son, Charles, tries to court this lady, or this other high school love interest girl, it does not go well. And she, like, escapes, and this cat claws him, and, like, he's just fucking down for the count, and, like, hobbles back to his mother, and then just a bunch of cats try to, like, surround their home, and then there's sheriffs and policemen trying to get them. And then when they turn into these werecats, it's so fucking funny how it looks, because it's not a big budget movie, really.
Mm-mm.
Oh man. Preston, help me out here. What do you have to say about this?
I guess to quote Neil Diamond, where to begin? Yeah, the pros and cons of this release kind of go hand in hand. So what makes it bad is also what makes it good, kind of like Trolls 2. Yeah, so, I mean, you described the basic plot, but the fun of this film is kind of talking about it with other friends and picking it apart and just going like, you remember this? You remember that scene? That scene didn't make any sense at all, but yet they did it. They said that line. That line was ridiculous. The cop in the movie is singing songs about guys holding their dicks and having one ball and I don't know. So yeah, just a lot of shit that does not make sense, but yet Stephen King thought it up. So yeah, the film opens with two policemen investigating a murder, one of which you already mentioned, that Mark Hamill's in this. He plays a cop, but it's a very fleeting role. It's like that's your purpose. See you later. So yeah, there's all these, as you said, dead cats. They're strung up everywhere, and it's so yeah. If you're a cat lover, yeah, this movie is not inviting at all. I bring up the beginning because it's fun when you think a movie is just going to be, especially when it's written by Stephen King, like you have no idea. It's like, oh, this is going to be great. But then, you know, like there's the one moment that happens that causes the whole fort to come down, and you're like, okay, it's this kind of movie. So it happens pretty early on, this moment. So yeah, when the cops go investigate this murder, they uncover the body of a young girl. Well, not so much uncover as the dead body of the girl pops out of a closet and somehow screams before hitting the ground. So I guess the sound designer felt it was necessary to include that scream. Yeah, because dead bodies scream. So, yeah, right then and there, you know exactly what you're stepping into. And then from there, we get a dancing scene between a sweet couple. And then we realize that it's mother and son. And they start making out. Brings her upstairs, and it's messed up.
It's a little messed up.
It's like animals. You know, animals fucking their own sisters and mothers, and yeah, I get it. Okay. Because they have that relationship, Charles has to appear to be normal. So yeah, like you said, like he needs to, bring in this, girl, Tanya, who works at a movie theater, is also in the same class as him. So he develops a crush on Tanya, but not so much as a crush as it is a obsession on the same level as Marky Mark in the movie Fear. So he carves a T into his arm, and, then of course, the real role of Tanya is that she's this thing that Charles needs to keep his mother alive. And then let's see what else from there. This is a pretty bizarre thing. Charles asks Tanya out, and she comes over to Charles' house, and then they have a scene where he's showing her around the house, and she notices that there's all these, all this nice art on the walls. And, by nice art, I mean, there's, these, tombstone, rub art. And I'm just gonna let that sit for a second before I explain. So Charles' mom likes to get paper. So, you know, like, you know, when you were a kid and you would just take your pencil and put it against something that has like a rough surface it's carved out, and you can like rub your pencil and you can see it on the paper that it takes the shape of that. So yeah.
Kind of like in Big Lebowski where
exactly. Yeah. Somebody wrote on a post-it note, and then you take a piece of paper and you write it on, you just put your pencil down and you get to see what they wrote. Charles' mom likes to collect grave rubbings. So yeah, they go out to the graveyard and they just trace or make prints of graves, tombstones, and they put it on their wall. But what makes it even better is that Tanya realizes, like, that's weird that you do that. But then she's okay with it later because Charles and her go bond over that. They go to a graveyard and has probably my favorite line of the whole movie is when Charles says, well, I got to get back to my mom. She would like to know that, you know, I didn't, you know, I can't remember what it was for verbatim, but it was just like that I didn't come. I came out to the graveyard and did some rubbing. So yeah, lines like that. It just littered all over the place, and we already hinted at the ridiculousness of Glenn Shattuck's role as like this perverted professor who has the hots for Charles and proceeds to grab his manhood, but it slices his hand off, and his dick cuts his hand off, and Charles gives it back to him. He's like, you know what you said about you know, not keeping your hands to yourself. Here's your hand back. So great.
Yeah, this movie shouldn't exist, but it does. And yeah. I think
Cop Kebab. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, it's a good film. When I say it's a good film, like, you see it today and there's like just nothing out like it today. And this movie could never be made today. Like, oh, no. As much as I would love to see a remake of this, I just don't see it being possible.
Yeah, unless it was made by like Sci-Fi Channel and had, you know, we say that the prosthetics are complete shit, but at least there was like a craft to it. And you see like really bad CGI today, you're just like, well, I'm just not going to see that. But the fact that you have like all these, like all this great talent aboard and they produce something as god awful as this, but also simultaneously so good. It's just shocking. And like you said, yeah, they wouldn't be able to make something like this. So it's just like a little time capsule piece. And Scream Factory put out this release, I think, 2 weeks ago, and had a good time going through the extras of that, which also includes a new audio commentary with the director and others. And just, it's like I mentioned earlier, it's just one of those movies where you just watch with some friends and just watch as it gets progressively worse and worse, like a Coen Brothers film, except a little different. You know, Coen Brothers movies, their characters, just the situation escalates. But this, like, the situation escalates, but also the how insane and bad it gets also escalates.
Correct. No, I'm there with you. There's a couple of like really cool like sidebar notes here.
Yeah.
One of them being that the house that the sleepwalkers used was used on the Waltons, and also the Robertson's neighborhood was the same neighborhood as Tom Hanks and the Burbs. And then the actual house the Roberts lived in was also the same house used as the Dragonfly Inn on Gilmore Girls, which is super funny.
Wow.
I thought that was kind of cool. Just like, it's like, dude, Mark Hamill, Clive Barker, Stephen King, John Landis, Joe Dante, Toby Hooper. I don't know, like, I guess Mick Garris was like, yes, come on here. We're all just going to have fun for a weekend.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and Tanya's parents are played by the same parents from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Who were married in real life as well.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Sleepwalkers, super, super fun movie. Yeah. And like,
yeah.
I just think that if given the chance today, I think there would be a super big cult following for this film. And like people would champion this movie.
Yeah, like not enough people talk about this movie, and I hope that through Scream Factory bringing it back, people do, because like even the cop characters are the best because they're dumbasses, and Ron Perlman especially, like he has one line where he's talking about Tanya's character And, you know, he's like, the Tanya's essentially Dr. Loomis, who's telling people the truth of the town and what's going on. And then everybody else is like, nah. And Ron Perlman says, this girl, she has a vivid imagination, but somebody needs to spank her on the butt. And if her parents aren't going to do it, I'll gladly volunteer. And there's like another scene where like a cop is trying to shoot the mom, I believe, or maybe it was Brady, and or Charles, Charles the son, and he's a horrible shot. And so I was thinking of Dumb and Dumber, where he's like, Harry, you're a horrible shot. And then when he runs out of bullets, he just has this certain expression on his face where he's like, it's like hard to explain, but like when you see it, you're like, oh my God, like nobody seems to be taking this serious, and it's great that they're not. But it's just a really, really bizarre film. Like, it was just like made by aliens and yes. Who have no idea how. I think I've even mentioned that certain type of filmmaking where it's just feels like completely otherworldly, with like the first film that we ever did. What was it? The Killer Clowns from Outer Space. Just feels like it's just exists in its own reality, and so you watch the film and are just completely baffled by how everybody reacts, how things happen, the rules of like the characters themselves, like how these cat vampire things like function. Like something will happen, like car turns invisible, they turn invisible. It just makes no sense. It really feels like one of those movies that Stephen King probably wrote during when he was loading up on a lot of drugs, you know?
Yeah, no,
and,
for sure.
And so even when Stephen King is at his worst, he's still at his best.
He's still at his best. That's perfectly said. Oh, Sleepwalkers 1992. Preston, I think we need to find a theater to we can host this screening.
Yes.
It would be awesome. But yeah, Sleepwalkers, check it out. It's on Scream Factory, finally, with a brand new edition of it. New transfer, extras and everything. It's a fun movie. You got to see it to believe it.
Yes.
It's fun. But yeah, I think that brings our bloody podcast number 28 to an end.
Yeah.
We're on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. We will be here through the holidays talking about horror stuff. And perhaps even for the holidays, we'll be giving some horror movies away on this podcast. So it will be super fun. But next week, do we have something for next week, or will it be a surprise?
I have a suggestion.
Okay.
Candyman.
Candyman, I got that in. I got it. Yeah. I'm not going to say that fucking name three times, but that's a scary one. That's a good one. I feel like we should have our good friend Susan Kamyab on that for that one, because I think she really loves that film. We'll try.
Well, she's getting married this weekend, so maybe not.
Yeah, we'll see. But yeah, if not, we'll
call us from your honeymoon, would you?
Yes, we'll talk about Candyman. So yes, we're on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Boomstick Comics, High Def Digest, and Preston can be found all over the internet.
Yes, all over.
Where can they find you, sir?
You can find me on freshfiction.tv, where I'm the features editor posting everybody else's stuff, including my own. And I also can be found on the Ditton Record Chronicle, in the Ditton Record Chronicle. So that's DittonRC.com. And I just posted two interviews this week, one with the director, Sean Anders, of Instant Family. So, yeah, I'm doing other things other than horror, too. And producer/screenwriter who didn't write this film, but he produced it, Oren Moverman. He produced Paul Dano's Wildlife. And so I talked to him and had a pretty interesting conversation about the themes of film. So if you're really interested in like deep
or thought-provoking films. I talked to some of these filmmakers and dissected the themes of their movies, which include family and the idea of family, like what, just all these existential questions. So if you're fascinated with that stuff outside of the horror realm, go take a look.
I like it. I like it. Yeah, My Bloody Podcast, look us up. We will be back next week, and we will have tales of dancing and horror to speak about.
Living deliciously.
But until then, we will be back. I'll talk to you soon.